The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now, it is available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade, the former editor of Money and George magazines, and the senior advisor to healthcare.com. Hi, Frank. How are you? What have you detected? Because I haven't. What have you detected in the dark?
Yeah, I am. I'm in my office. We have no power, as most people around this neighborhood have no power. So I'm doing this report by flashlight. But I've got a lot to report. I've got real breaking news, and it's really interesting. We've talked about these false positives. There were people who went in who got tested, and they tested positive for COVID-19. And guess what? The test was wrong. It was false. They did not have it. But in the meantime, they found themselves shipped off on the basis of the false report into COVID-only wards where, of course, they were in danger of catching this highly contagious disease and potentially deadly disease. So the question is, gee whiz, there was a batch of 90 false positives that the state discovered quite by accident, but we'll spend that in a minute. And what happened to those 90 people? Well, here's an answer. This is breaking news. According to this memo I got finally back from the Department of Public Health last night at midnight, at least three of those false positives ended up testing positive for the COVID after they were put in COVID wards. And the state is still waiting on the results from seven others. That just tells you something about the turnaround time for this testing. You can't get results quickly, but boy, you would think Department of Public Health could get answers quicker than normal, but at least in the case of these seven others, they have not had it. So there you are. You got 10 of the 90. Well, we know three for sure have tested positive after the false positive and put in a COVID unit, and then we're waiting on seven others. We still do not know. So here's what happened to one of these 90. This is a guy named Joe Spinella. We reported on him last week. But it's good to recap it. So here's Joe's 83 years old. He's a retired hairdresser. Lately his legs have been giving him some problems. So his wife Rita took him over to the hospital to get see what they thought. And the hospital says, you know, Joe, I think you should go over to some rehab center, check yourself in for a couple of days and do some intensive rehab. And I think that'll really help you. So he goes over to this nearby rehab center and they test everyone who comes in the door for COVID-19, make sure that someone's going to stay with them for a couple of days, doesn't spread the disease. Very logical. And guess what? Joe tests positive. Now, at the rehab center, even though he had just tested negative at the hospital. But the rehab center says, uh-oh, here it is, you got a positive. So they ship Joe over to a nursing home where he's put into a COVID-only unit. Now, he's in a private room, which is good. He's not in the same room with someone, with another sick patient. But the nurses go from the COVID room to the non-COVID room, and that can spread the disease. And he's in there for more than 14 days until the state says, oops, oh, gee whiz, we just did some testing over here, unrelated. But boy, guess what? We made a mistake. That test was false. Joe should never have been put into the COVID-only unit, which raises the question, for the family, well, we're really relieved that Joe does not have, that there was a false positive, but it raises the question, did he get the COVID disease in the in this COVID-only unit that he should not have been in? So on that basis, I wrote a whole series of questions to the Department of Public Health that's more than a week ago, got no results, no response until midnight last night. So Jill, what do you? I've got all the details here, and we'll go through them. But what do you make of this so far?
I make of it the same fascinating, that word is in quotes, problem that we have that is now leaking out into the universe, which is there's a question, you know, there's an issue with positives and negatives, and we just had it with the governor of Ohio. So this is just now going to add to the, shall we say, confusion and the fog of war.
But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean,
because tests
that aren't accurate are starting to really complicate things.
And I would just like to interject.
And the turnaround times are another real problem.
Right, and I would just like to say that, to our credit and or for better or worse, we have been mentioning this in your shows because of anecdotal information going back to, you know, different family members in California mentioned it, that you waited the entire quarantine period to get their test results.
Right. You know, this is not helpful. This is not helpful.
But this is
so
life. This
one
is...
of my logical, one of my logical questions was, Joe got shipped over to the nursing home. They did not retest him. If they had retested him, it would have raised a question about the false positive. Okay. But they didn't. So I asked whether the Department of Public Health thinks it's a good idea to do any retesting before they admit people. I mean, they certainly did it at the rehab center, make sure that Joe, you know, they were trying to find out if Joe had COVID. But that's their policy. Everyone who comes to be admitted is tested. Well, what happens at the nursing home? And I asked the question because the nursing home has an incentive to just take someone who tests positive without doing any retesting. They're getting $620 a day extra for every COVID patient they admit. And when they admit them, they put them in isolation for 14 days. That's okay, a little bit of a windfall for the nursing home. So should they be careful about not taking somebody like Joe, who actually has a false positive, and putting in a COVID unit and perhaps get having him catch that virus and even die? Okay, so it's a logical question. Here's the answer. They discourage it. The Department of Public Health is discouraging this and telling these nursing homes they should not retest. And getting to the fog of this memo that I got at midnight last night, it seems like it's the unreliability of the tests. They don't want to complicate it. If you tested positive and tested negative, so just you test positive, we think you're positive. In you go and you stay for 14 days. We watch you, see if you develop any symptoms, or, hey, by the way, maybe even develop the COVID while you're with us.
Can I just jump? Yeah, I just would like to.
Please. Yeah, right. Please tell me.
It's not a tell you. It's an if I ruled the world, because when this became about. And I'm sure you remember back to this. This is a problem. People are very terrible, and this is where it also becomes political. People are very terrible with the unseen. You are a walking, talking example of how someone, just because of your medical history, about how someone can methodically approach something and actually get ahead of it. But what has happened with COVID is... everyone is kind of okay way back at the beginning when they thought that they were going to catch it. If they weren't careful, they were going to catch it. The problem started with the asymptomatic. And because, you know, we've all in our lives had tests that came back inconclusive and it had to be retested. And there isn't a doctor, a walking, talking medical practitioner worth his or her or its salt that won't retest something if there is any ambiguity before, you know, walking in there and slicing and dicing.
Right.
That being
said, you're not getting results, when you do a retest and you got to wait 14 days or 5 days.
That's the problem. Exactly. So
10 days.
What I want to say is it's the asymptomatic nature, because at least going to the present now, at least the governor of Ohio got to be retested and he's being retested again tomorrow. Because he didn't have symptoms. And what I want to say is, wouldn't it be fair if the person was asymptomatic? You know, you're going to have to do something before you stuff them in a potentially contagious situation. I'm sorry, I'm sorry that there aren't enough tests or whatever, but once you are claiming someone is positive, it, I would hope, is becomes your responsibility, or you're going to have to change your policy so that that until it's clear that it's a negative, you unclear until it's clear that it's a false positive or not, mm-hmm. you haven't or taken not. A step. But you
yeah.
That's
logical. Yep. That's logical. You're exactly right. The unreliability test should mandate that they test until they're sure, rather than just locking people. I mean, essentially, he was locked away from his family for 14 days. And imagine the anguish of the family. He's 83 years old. He's in a COVID. And we got 89. So here's the breakdown of the 90. 63 of them are nursing home residents. So that's 63 families who now have these false positives. Five in assisted living, so that gets it all the way up to 68. 21 people of staff members, workers in nursing homes and these assisted living also was false positive, and one in the hospital. I imagine that's a person who had hospice and actually died. So that one person actually died out of these 90 false positives, but the state assures me that he was in hospice and they have no cause of death, but they're assuming it was not COVID. Okay, so let's take that for granted. But we've got the three that I talked about before who were false positive and then went into nursing home and within a week tested positive. They had the COVID. And there are seven other maybes, and we're still waiting for test results. Someone has to explain to me the fact that these people were put into their own private rooms. That's good, but they were also still in a COVID unit. And they make a point of saying that none of these units had extended gown use. Is that good or bad? You would think if you're in a COVID unit with other COVID patients, you would want extended gown use. Or is the state trying to tell me that these were mild cases, or for some reason they didn't worry too much? I don't know. And I can't get an answer because they dropped this memo on last night at midnight, and it's first thing in the morning, and I can't get back to them. But I will later in the day, and we'll try to get some clarity on this. The good news seems to be the three who tested positive, we seem to be okay now because they've been followed, developed, and serious symptoms that they couldn't handle. So they seem to be okay according to this memo. But of course, there are still seven others that we're not sure about yet. All right. So let's turn to the company that produced these false positives. It's a company called Thermo Fisher Scientific. It's out of Massachusetts. It's a big billion-dollar corporation. This is just a small part of what they do. Anyway, the state wanted to do batch testing, so because they want to speed up the results. So instead of testing one little specimen at a time, from which they 10 all at once, and they test all 10 at once, and if there are no positives, then good. We only have to do one retest, and we've covered 10 people. We can move this thing along faster. Okay, so in the process of just doing testing, whether you can do this batch testing, guess what? They need positives. So they take 144 of Thermo Fisher Scientific's positives to retest. And 90 of them turn out to be false positives. Now, when I talk to doctors about 90 out of 144, they gasp. This is not good, okay? So what's the state do? And the other complicating factor here is the FDA gave Thermo a waiver so they can cut some corners, expedite the process. And I asked very logically, did that FDA waiver contribute to this batch of very false positives? And the state tells me there's no determination. Now, what I take, say that's a quote, no determination. What I take from that is the investigation is ongoing and they haven't come to a conclusion. I asked whether Connecticut gave Thermo Fisher a waiver as also, and they tell me that they're not aware of the waiver. So that says to me the Department of Public Health is still in the middle of a real investigation into Thermo Fisher in this batch, try to figure out what happened and never have it happen again to any families. Another factor, this guy named Josh Gabal, he's the chief operating officer of the state. He's in the press a lot because he's got a big job. Well, he's also a former vice president of Thermo Fisher. So I ask, I'm not doubting this man, but I ask, did he recuse himself from the contract that Connecticut just awarded to Thermo Fisher? And on that one, I got silence. Now, I think if he had recused himself, the state would tell me that. Okay, I'm just saying that. Maybe I'm too skeptical, but I think they would tell me if he had recused himself. They did tell me that he's not involved in the Department of Public Health investigation. That doesn't mean he recused himself. They say he's not involved. They do tell me specifically that he's recusing himself from any investigation that might be launched by the state, by the Public Health Committee, the House Public Health Committee. So they're very clear. He's recused himself from the Public Health Committee. He's not involved in the Department of Health investigation, and they're silent about whether he recused himself from the contract. Come to your own conclusions about that. So what do you think of those complications, Jill, about the FDA waiver and Josh Gabal being seemingly involved in the contract that Thermo got? So let me just add this one last point. I also asked whether the Lamont administration has apologized to any of these 90 people who got the false positives. That's a fair question. And guess what? They're silent on that too. And that's a shame.
The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now. It is available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade, the former editor of Money and George magazines, and the senior advisor to healthcare.com. Here he is. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Joe.